From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gunrunner reaching for the wire, collected alongside, and then comes West Coast and War Story. But Gunrunner's on top of the world! He wins the Breeders' Cup Classic!
Arrogator's getting going late now. Collected is in front. Arrogate closing on the outside. It's a Bob Baffert 1-2, but Collected gonna win it. Collected and Martin Garcia won the Pacific Classic.
Originating from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
But Arrogate swoops up on the outside. America's King Croesus of horse racing went to the front. 200 meters left to go. Arrogate has drawn away from Gunrunner.
Always Dreaming with a 2.5 length lead, a 16th to go. Looking at Lee is second. Then comes Battle of Midway, Classic Empire. They're coming to the line, and the dream comes true. Always Dreaming has won the Kentucky Derby.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning and welcome to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, together in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios, ready to roll for the next 2 hours this morning in a very busy show. We're going to tell you about that coming up momentarily. Edging closer to the first Saturday in May, 2018. Yeah, I always like to kick off the program with a Derby countdown. 140 days, 8 hours, 54 minutes, and 20 seconds away from that Run for the Roses. 42 days away from the Pegasus World Cup at Gulfstream Park. We'll be there to kick off our 2018 broadcast season and bring you that exclusive coverage. And just 8 shopping days left until Christmas, so keep that in mind, ticking down to the final days before Santa comes. Good morning, JT.
Good morning. How's it going?
Everything is good. You got all your shopping done?
Yes.
I do too.
Absolutely.
Pretty much. I have one more gift to get. That's it.
I'm waiting on one delivery, but you know how that goes.
Yeah.
So, I was super organized this year and got everything done. So, but I'm leaving town for Christmas this year, so I won't be around for the last minute
stuff.
That's
right. I'll be flying solo on the show next weekend.
I'm sorry. You don't have any friends?
People have to tune in to me for 2 hours. That's not going to be a very good sales pitch for the show next week.
Can't somebody come in? You got to find somebody.
No. I like doing it solo.
Do you?
Yeah.
I hate doing it solo.
We'll have plenty of special guests. Trust me.
That won't be just me. That didn't come out right.
No, not at all. Anyway, a bit of a quieter week in thoroughbred racing. Not a whole lot going on. A big day at Gulfstream, I guess, would be the attention, the focal point of thoroughbred racing today with all the greatest stakes action at Gulfstream Park. We'll talk about that later in the show, too.
Yeah, Gulfstream's got a very good card, the graded stakes, and Fairgrounds also has a nice card. Anthony and I went over that on the stakes preview yesterday. And, there's actually some decent racing. It seems a little chalky to me overall. But, it's something to entertain you during the afternoon if you're not watching a bowl game. Don't the bowl games kick off today? I think the first
one. Well, some NFL action today. There probably are some bowl games, too.
Yeah, they start
the Sunday NFL game.
A little
Saturday
football. they're pressing it. We got football Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, 4 days this week. It's
out of control.
Yes. I'm actually leading the TaylorMade League, and I had a bye last week as the number one player this year. I don't know how the heck I pulled that off. But anyway, it's put up or shut up time this weekend for me. If I lose, I get nothing.
Yeah, well, not quite put up or shut up time for those who are participating in our Road to the Florida Derby Challenge, because it's only week 3 of the contest and you can still get in. If you haven't entered yet, that's fine. You can still enter today and submit your selections, and it's pretty simple. You go to our website, horseracingradio.net, and you register for that Road to the Florida Derby Challenge. You pick the winner of today's showcase race of the afternoon at Gulfstream Park, and you do that every single week now through the Fountain of Youth. And guess what? If you're on top of the list in the leaderboard, you're going to win the grand prize of a trip for two to the Florida Derby next year. That's coming up in 2018, you'll be with us at Gulfstream Park. We'll get a chance to visit with you on the show that morning. You'll get a chance to enjoy round-trip tickets, the airfare, the lodging, all taken care of courtesy of our friends at Gulfstream Park. And today's contest race is the Tropical Turf Stakes at Gulfstream. You have to submit the winner, at least your selection to win, and an alternate selection for the Tropical Turf Stakes. It has a post time of 4:37 Eastern. You have until 30 minutes prior to that post to get your selections in. Head over to horseracingradio.net and play in the Road to the Florida Derby Challenge and take your chance at winning that trip for two to Gulfstream Park.
Yeah, there's plenty of opportunity to get in. The leaderboard is jammed, and it's we've had one contestant pick the second place finisher in both weeks, so he's leading with 14 points. You get 10 points for a victory, so certainly plenty of time, plenty of racing left, and you should participate in that contest because it's a cool prize.
Yeah, great prize, and prizes for finishing second, third, fourth, and fifth as well, so you have an opportunity to get some nice HRN and Gulfstream swag, and of course, the grand prize of that trip for two to the Florida Derby, and all the details, again, on our website. Poll question for this morning. We thought with the Eclipse Awards right around the corner, we'd start looking at who the HRN Nation feels should be voted Eclipse Champion in some of the categories. So today we'll focus on the two-year-old boys, and we want to know who gets your vote. Which two-year-old gets your vote for Champion Juvenile at the Eclipse Awards this year? And we're going to give you a few different choices. You can have the Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner Good Magic. We'll give you Bolt Doro, or Catholic Boy, who won the Grade 2 Remsen and is now 3-for-4 to begin his young career. Those are your three choices, or you can vote for other, but if you choose other, we want you to specify who it is, and we'll try to read through those as we move throughout the program. My guess is that we're going to see a lot of action for Bolt Doro and for Good Magic, even though I think Catholic Boy has a dog in the fight now after winning the Remsen. Who do you think gets it?
Well, I mean, right now I would say Bolt Doro has the best body of work,
yep.
but I'm a huge Catholic Boy fan. I mean, I've made a lot of money on Catholic Boy.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I like him. But I think as far as year-end awards are concerned, I think Bolt Doro has arguably the best body of work.
Well, you can vote on that poll question this morning on our Twitter feed, at HRRN on Twitter. You can also weigh in on Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let us know who you think should be Champion Juvenile of 2017. All right, here's what's coming up over the course of the next 2 hours. When we come back from our first break, we're going to visit with 19-year-old apprentice jockey Wes Hamilton, who this past week earned his first victory. As a matter of fact, he didn't just win one race on the card. He won two at Laurel. So we'll talk to Wes coming up here in just a few minutes. Retired sports writer from the Philadelphia Daily News, Dick Girardi, going to join us right around 8:30 Eastern. Dick has spent more than three decades covering sports in Philadelphia and covering thoroughbred racing, and he has a true passion for the sport of thoroughbred racing. We will talk to Dick coming up at 8:30. Don't miss that interview. Should be spectacular. Francisco Torres, journeyman jockey who recently announced his retirement, is going to join us right around 9 o'clock Eastern time. And at 9:25 Eastern, Terry Birch, who is the interim director of the equine industry program at the University of Louisville, will be with us to tell you all about the great work that they're doing at U of L. We're going to get to our first break. We'll come back and visit with Wes Hamilton. That's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Have you been looking for high-quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is grown in Washington State's Ellensburg Valley. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Call Brad Green at 859-588-5480.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine. Equine.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind, absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Blue Hen Madness toward the quarter pole. Narrow lead from Hissy. Fit is a between horses and Have Hope is out there 3-4 wide. Storm and Margaret is driven along from fourth and Transit. Ground saving. I just want to win his tip to the outside, but at last 3/16 of a mile. Have Hope just in front. Have Hope for the final furlong from Hissy Fit and Blue Hen Madness. I just want to win closing willingly to the middle of the track. Have Hope. I just want to win on the outside. I just want to win. Have Hope desperate. I just want to win. I just want to win. Apprentice Weston. Have Hamilton in his first professional victory. I just want to win. Have Hope was second, and then it was Hissy Fit, and they're followed by Include a Check.
Dave Rodman with the call of a very special race for one Wes Hamilton, who, as you heard Dave reference in the call, broke his maiden on the jockey side of things with that victory aboard a horse appropriately named I Just Wanna Win. And Wes Hamilton is going to be with us momentarily here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, but we do want to welcome everybody back to the show. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Now, Wes is 19 years old. His dad, Steve Cowboy Hamilton, is 43 years old, and they've had the privilege of riding together on a couple of different occasions. Wes finally figuring out how to beat his dad and win a couple of races on that program this past week. Wes, welcome to the program, my friend. Happy to have you on board.
I sure do. Appreciate it. How you doing?
Everything is well. Congratulations on the big victory. Tell me what was going through your mind when you were listening to that replay.
Oh, it was crazy. I was so excited. I was laughing a little bit. It's really cool. I never thought I'd make it this far, but I was just really excited, sir. It gets me really excited watching them and watching the replays and seeing what I look like and just learning from it. Every time I race, I look back at the video and watch it about 100 times, just seeing what I could have done different and try to learn from everything I'm doing.
Is your dad a big critic? Does he give you tips after every race?
Yeah, he gives me tips and tells me I should have done this or that, but you did a good job. He's a good teacher. I've learned a lot riding with him the past couple days, in the past couple races we rode together. So he's always got my back, and he's trying to look out for me and teach me as much as he can.
What's the biggest thing that you've been able to learn from watching your dad ride?
Well, I've learned a lot from them, just really keeping a hold of the horse and keeping their head picked up. I mean, I've learned just finish on them, be really strong with the horse. I think my dad's a pretty strong rider coming down the lane, so I've learned to really finish on a horse and where's the finish line. You got to finish on them, you know?
Wes, what for people that are listening that have never ridden in a race, a lot like myself, what does that mean to finish on a horse? What do you mean when you say that?
Well, to really, really be pushing the horse and get everything out of the horse you can. I mean, if you're laying last, you can still reel them in and whip them a few times and really ride them and get low on them and push them, finish on them, you know? You can still make it no matter where you are. If you got a horse, you got a shot. So just really getting low and pushing the horse, just not just sitting up there. Just you got to make them work.
How do you learn to rate the horse when you're riding a race, whether it's 6 furlongs or a mile and a 16th? What's going through your head during the race? Where you know you have a feeling that it's time to move. We got to get going.
Well, my dad and a couple other people that I ride with, they've told me when you feel like it's time to go, wait a little longer. When you feel like it's time to go after that, wait a little longer. Now it's time to go and go on with them, because you want to save as much horse as you can until you have to go, because then you're going to finish the strongest you can. Usually, breaking or rating a horse, I look at the program for a second. I don't really get too worried about it, looking at the program, but I'll see what their time was for their last race, if they're coming off a sprint or a long, and see what they might want. And really just, there's no plan, because right when you come out of the gate, it's a whole different plan. I usually just try to get good position, and if I don't, sit on them and just wait until it's time to go. And when you think it's time to go, just wait a little longer and then go with them.
That's great. I love that. You're 19 years old. How old were you when you thought to yourself, I really want to be a jockey?
Well, I really wanted to. Ever since I was little, I never really got into it. I was always playing sports, and I mean, I played just about every sport there is out there. I wrestled, basketball, lacrosse, football. So I never really thought I was going to. I mean, I was thinking about going to college and stuff, but then it just hit me. I wanted to do it. I mean, Dad went back to riding, and I just felt real confident. I want to do this. So I just changed my plan, and I went on with it. I mean, it's going really good so far. I'm really happy with it.
You know, Wes, a lot of times when we talk to young jockeys like this that follow in their dad's footsteps, they'll often tell us that, you know, hey, my dad, he didn't want me to follow in his footsteps. My mom didn't like it either. How about, was your dad supportive when you said, this is what I want to do, Dad?
Yeah, he was definitely supportive. He wanted to make sure that's what I wanted to do, because he didn't want me doing it just because he did it, you know. He wanted to make sure, like, he wanted me to try it out. And I went down to Carolina and broke babies for a while and really found, like, I love riding horses. So he wanted to make sure I was just doing something that I love. So he was really supportive.
Talking with 19-year-old Wes Hamilton, the apprentice jockey who has earned his first couple of victories. Those came on December 11th. You heard the race call of I Just Want to Win coming out of the commercial break. Wes, interestingly enough, your dad has won more than 1,300 races in his career. He's ridden graded stakes winners in that storied career. He was fourth in that race that you won with I Just Want to Win. What was it like finally being able to finish in front of him and everybody else in that race?
It was awesome. It was great. My dad was right next to me when we come around the turn, and I had to tip my horse out because everybody was bunched up right in front of me. So I got my horse out a little bit, and he was still right next to me, and I hit him once, and we had a lot of horse under us, and he saw that we were running, and we started pulling away from him, and he yelled at me, go on with him, Wes. So I got like an adrenaline rush when he yelled, because it sounded like he was right in my ear, and I knew I was trying to win it. And he yelled at me, "Go on with him." And it was just a great feeling. It was like the best feeling ever. I can't even explain it, how the feeling. It's so much like excitement that everything slows down and you can't hear nothing but the horse, your heartbeat, and the horse's feet hitting the ground. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it has to be an amazing feeling, and great that your dad was right there alongside of you and so supportive as well. If your dad had needed room to get through and he was the guy that had horse, would you let him through?
I mean, I wouldn't have just got out of the way. I would have kept my horse straight, but I wouldn't. I mean, I would have tipped my horse out a little bit and gave him room, but I wouldn't just get way away from him. I mean, you still got a shot. You're on a horse. You got to still ride the race, you know. Even though someone else got horse, doesn't mean get out of the way. You still got to ride your race. They got to make a move and put their horse in a good spot.
Every once in a while, a rider will do you a favor. When I was training horses, I had a horse that was making a huge run, and Terry Lipham, who was a great quarter horse jockey and thoroughbred rider later on, he kind of moved out of the way because Fernando Toro, who was on my horse, was yelling at him, and he was out of horse at the time, so he kind of moved out of the way and let Fernando through, and he came back after the race, and he walked up to me and goes, "You owe me one." So it's sometimes riders, they will give you a shot, or if they're out of horse or whatever, but that's a good question. Especially when it's your dad.
If you're out of horse, that's a different story. But, I mean, dad, he got fourth. That's still good. But he did let me out a little bit, though. He helped me out.
Wes, outside of your father, if you could emulate any jockey in the game today or even a past jockey that you watched growing up, who would it be?
Probably he's a newer jockey, I guess. Recently got hurt. His name is Alex Cintron.
Yeah. Yeah. Why would you emulate him? What makes him so good?
Well, I just think he's taught me a lot. He's let me use his saddle and his whip and everything, and he's helped me out. And I watch him, and probably him and Trevor McCarthy ride, and they're really good on horseback. I mean, they look good. They finish strong, and I talk to him almost every day. They're really good buddies of mine. And I feel I don't look as good as them on a horse yet, but I'm working on it, and I watch how they ride on videos, and they're really smart on a horse. They'll put them in a good spot a lot of times, and it's hard to do. I mean, you don't just get in a good spot every race. You gotta look at the whole field. You can't just look in one spot. You gotta see where everybody's at and see where the best spot is to go, and they're really good at that. So I try to learn and make myself better at that by watching them.
He's Wes Hamilton, 19-year-old apprentice who is off to a fast start in his riding career, and, of course, riding alongside his dad at Laurel has to be pretty special. Wes, as always, man, we appreciate the time. We know you've got to get back to working horses this morning, so we won't keep you, but want to let you know all of our guests who appear on the program are going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. We'll get that to you, and keep it rolling, my friend.
Yes, sir. I sure do appreciate it.
All right, bud. Happy holidays.
You too. Take it easy.
All right. Safe trip. Wes Hamilton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Great kid, huh?
Yeah, very nice. And it looks like he's got the right attitude. You know, he's studying films, watching the other riders. Of course, his dad's not going to let up on him. You know that. So, but, yeah, it's fantastic. It's great to see young riders come around. I used to love having young jockeys ride for me, and I love their enthusiasm. I had the kind of stable that, you know, we could give some people shots, and there's a lot of people that rode their first race for me because I was always pretty game.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Especially, you know, you have a young rider that is hungry, right, and wants to win. And you might put them on a long shot, but to them, it's like they're riding a 1-5 favorite, right? Because they're going to give it their all. They want to win. They're hungry.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that. And then, of course, you get the weight allowance, too. And a lot of times the horses that I was running weren't, ever going to be high weights. So
yeah, he was when he won that race the other day, his first race, and I said his dad finished fourth. His dad carried 120, and young Wes was riding at 114, so he had a 6-pound weight allowance from his dad. And I was going to ask him if his dad can make 114. Probably not.
Bad question.
I would say probably not at
this
point.
His dad's 43. Give him a break.
He has no interest in making 114 at this point, I'm sure. But great stuff, and congratulations to Wes Hamilton. A really feel-good story here, and we wish him all the best moving forward. It is time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf story, brought to you every single Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. When we come back, we'll visit with longtime sports writer of the Philadelphia Daily News. That's Dick Girardi. Stay tuned for that. You won't want to miss it. That's next, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
At beautiful Hialeah on a warm, pleasant Saturday afternoon in February of 1956, a banner field of thoroughbreds went postward while the running of the highly prestigious Widener Handicap. The winner's share of the purse was to be $92,600. In that super field of 9 horses that were to answer the call to post were Sailor, Find, Social Outcast, Man of Destiny, Nashua, and an invader from Venezuela, El Chama. There was an all-time record crowd on hand, 42,000-plus, breaking the previous high watermark for attendance by some 5,000. The previous largest crowd had been on Flamingo Day in 1955, when Nashua won that event as a 3-year-old. Most of those on hand, many of whom jammed the paddock area with cameras, came to catch a glimpse of the Sonny Fitzsimmons trained Nashua, who had Eddie Arcaro in the irons and packed a top weight of 127 pounds. There were a number of critics who felt that Nashua had worked too fast just a few days before the race, having clocked a 202 flat just the Tuesday previous to the race at Tropical Park. That workout had been necessitated by a very heavy strip at Hialeah. Still others doubted that Mr. Fitz could bring Nashua up to a winning effort under the heavy impost against a very tough handicap field at 1.25 miles after having been off the racetrack competitively for 4 months. Nashua appeared to be highly keyed up in the walking ring. Arcaro admitted that he was ranked right up until the time the field loaded into the starting gate. The strategy was no doubt for Arcaro to drop Nashua off the early pace while stalking the early leaders and then make that one big run. There were other notable closers in that race, however. Alfred G. Vanderbilt's entry of Find and Social Outcast were both highly capable of making late runs. So, at least in theory, it would become a cat-and-mouse game with rating and judging of pace being most critical. At the break, it was Sailor going out to the front, but Arcaro was forced to let Nashua have a little bit more of his head than he would have liked, since his mount was virtually pulling Arcaro out of the saddle. As it turned out, Nashua stayed head-and-head with Sailor through the early going, and the question became that if that early rapid pace with Nashua's top impost of 127 would in the long run take its toll on the crowd favorite. Not only that, but the well-noted closer Find was right there lurking in third, waiting to pounce. Sailor was the first to succumb to the pressure of the early fractions, and Nashua assumed the lead as the field swung on around the far turn. Fine had not given up the chase and was hanging right with Nashua as they hit the top of the stretch for the final 2 furlongs. It was Nashua, Fine, and now Social Outcast was making his big run as expected from well off the pace to get up into contention. As they came to the final 16th, it was Nashua hanging tenaciously to the lead, with Arcaro getting everything he could from the strapping colt, then Find, Sailor, and Social Outcast, who was charging out in the middle of the racetrack, gobbling up huge strides. Nashua stayed on gamely and courageously in front of the wire, barely holding off the flying Social Outcast by a head, with Sailor only another head back and Find fourth just 3 heads back in a classic example of the well-known blanket finish. It was, by any measure, means, or standard, a great horse race indeed. One of the stewards, Cal Rainey, said it had been the very best horse race he had seen in 20 years. That win by Nashua, the big son of Nasrullah out of Segula by Johnstown, put Nashua over the $1 million career earnings mark, and he thereby joined the illustrious Citation as the only other horse up to that day to reach that lofty mark. A blanket finish and a victory for Nashua in the Widener Handicap, February 1956 at Hialeah. A great moment indeed in thoroughbred racing.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
There's so much going on in Lexington in December. The holidays. Want to have a holiday party? Go to Tony's. Basketball. Want to watch this great season of Cats basketball unfold? Go to Tony's Steaks and Seafood. The best food, the best service, the family atmosphere you love. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood, right across from Triangle Park. Visit tonysoflexington.com. And happy holidays.
Power. Bodhi Meister is turning the Arkansas Derby into an absolute romp.
Passion.
Pioneer of the Nile, full stretch, the keeping chocolate candy and day. And Pioneer of the Nile and Garrett Gomez have won the Santa Anita Derby.
Performance.
Royal Delta, my Miss Aurelia, here is a champion again. Royal Delta has won the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic.
Gainsway Stallion Empire Maker, a champion and sire of 11 Grade 1 winners, including three-time Eclipse Award champion Royal Delta and classic-placed Bodhi Meister, sire of 2017 Kentucky Derby winner Always Dreaming, and Pioneer of the Nile, sire of Triple Crown winner American Pharoah. Empire Maker's first U.S. crop since returning from Japan are now weanlings and have sold for up to $425,000. Boasting excellent fertility, his 2018 book is limited to 130 mares.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Lionheart turns for home, and undefeated Smarty Jones comes wide off the turn, and these two hook up at the top of the stretch. Lionheart is all heart, Smarty Jones is all out, and those two deadlocked at the eighth pole, and Smarty Jones is roused to the lead by journeyman jockey Stuart Elliott, and they have taken the lead away from Lionheart. Farther back, it's Limehouse and Imperialism, and here is the first undefeated winner of the Kentucky Derby since Seattle Slough in 1977. Smarty Jones has done it. Limehouse was second. Imperialism finished third, and Limehouse was fourth. What a moment this must be for Stuart Elliott, a 39-year-old journeyman. He has just won the race of a lifetime.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, and our Jimmy Johns of Lexington Studios, and Tom Durkin with the call of one of the more memorable Kentucky Derbies over the past 15 or 20 years. And you think back to Smarty Jones and everything that he was able to accomplish. It was very special, not just for all of us who were able to witness that race, but certainly for our next guest, Dick Girardi, who has spent more than three decades covering the sport of thoroughbred racing and covering sports for the Philadelphia Daily News. And considering the fact that Smarty Jones was a Pennsylvania bred, began his career at Philadelphia Park with a couple of victories there before bursting onto the big stage and, of course, nearly sweeping the Triple Crown had to be special for Dick Girardi as well. Dick, welcome to the Equine Forum. Happy to have you on board.
Happy to be here, guys. Yeah, it certainly was special to have a horse that I watched win his first two starts at Parks in November of 2003 go on to come back close to sweeping the Triple Crown. Yeah, it's certainly the best continuing horse racing story I ever covered. Nothing even close.
Yeah, I can imagine as somebody who spent, well, really most of your lifetime covering Philadelphia sports, that this was a story that had to just, you know, be near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, it was interesting because historically, certainly since I've been in town since 1985, none of the pro teams had won anything. So when Smarty Jones won the Derby, that was like the first big event. And people said, well, it's just the Derby. I said, no, you don't get it. That is the deal. That's the Super Bowl. That's it, man. In horse racing, you win the Derby. And then, of course, everybody was freaked out when he didn't win the Triple Crown. I said, hey, that's just like winning three Super Bowls in a row. That's really hard to do.
Yeah, that was a day I'll never forget, was his loss in the Belmont. How when he took the lead, the crowd went crazy, and when they hit the wire, it was like a wake. It was so quiet at Belmont Park. It was such a contrast. And what did you make of that race?
Yeah, I mean, 120,000 people can make a lot of noise. My problem was this: at the top of the stretch, because I feel pretty confident. I was the only person in the grandstand that had watched every last gallop of his between Preakness and the Belmont Stakes. And I knew what his stride looked like, and I could see through my glasses that the stride was starting to shorten. And I wasn't completely shocked, as you could see the last couple of weeks, the wear and tear was starting to show up. And then I look back, and I'm saying, well, who's coming? And I saw that little horse, Birdstone, and then you look at the wire and the horses, and you try to measure what's going to get there first. And I kind of knew he was in trouble, I think, before everybody else did. But, yeah, I've never heard a place be so loud for so long and then so quiet so fast.
Dick, it was interesting reading through your final column, and you pointed out the fact that, yeah, you loved covering sports, but your true love has always been at the racetrack and thoroughbred racing. Take us back to the beginning. Where did that love of horse racing begin for Dick Girardi?
It probably began in college. I majored in journalism at the University of Maryland and minored in gambling, mostly poker. But then I had a couple friends of mine one day said, you know, look, we should go to the racetrack. And I was instantly intrigued, but I didn't really know enough about it. And then what really got me into it was Andy Byers' book, Picking Winners, that came out in the mid-70s. Andy's a good friend, longtime friend, and as I think most people know, I'm a member of the Fire Figures team, have been for a while. And that's what I said, oh, now this sport starts to make sense. And Andy was such a gifted writer and just had a way of saying things. And I think he's really the guy that pushed me into it. He's always been kind of my mentor, and it's been a great thrill to have him as a good close friend all these years.
Where do you see turf riders going now? It seems like we've lost a lot. Newspapers aren't really interested in covering thoroughbred racing much anymore. What's going to happen to these great people like yourself and Andy Byer and that add so much, I think, to our sport?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, obviously, there's still some terrific writers out there. And one of the things I made special mention of in my last column was how grateful I was to all the people I worked for that I got to cover the Derby the last 31 years in a row and basically covered every big race that I could get to, because as you guys know, there's not many daily newspapers that are sending people out there anymore. And I think our guys realized there was a value, because in the Philadelphia market, people had been reading my stuff for three decades, and I think it was something that people were still interested in. But yeah, it's a great question. Because a lot of the younger sports editors and people in newspapers, they just don't know horse racing. And if they don't know it, they don't know that it has value. It's going to be a long-term problem. I know from the time I first went out there to cover the big races to now, there's a whole lot fewer regular newspaper people than there once were. And that's really unfortunate.
Talking with Dick Girardi, longtime sports writer for the Philadelphia Daily News. He has decided to call it a career. You'll still be able to catch him on radio and doing some other appearances. But Dick, at this point, what does the future hold for Dick Girardi?
Well, you know, I'm gonna give my hands a little break here, because as I wrote 7,000 stories for the paper and a bunch of freelance stories along the way, I was actually trying to estimate how many words I've written. Mike, and this is just a guess. I'm thinking it's about $7 million for the newspaper, because we wrote long at the Daily News, so I'm thinking the average of like 1,000 words a story. So I'm going to take a little break from that. But you're right, I got other action. I've done a horse racing TV show up here in Philly that's been on for 25 years in the market, called Let's Go Racing. It's on every Saturday morning. Bruce Casella runs it, produces it. Keith Jones, track announcer at Parks, is the host. I'm also the analyst for Penn State basketball. I've been doing that. This is the 14th season. And as I mentioned, I've been an initial member of the buyer figure team. So I have all that going, and I'll certainly get back to writing at some point. I'm just going to give a little break right now.
You mentioned in your final column that you felt so fortunate to be able to cover basketball and horse racing, two sports that you dearly love. And it reminded me of Byron Abbott, that used to write for the Los Angeles Times. He really didn't like horse racing. He was one of the greatest handicappers I ever met, but he really didn't enjoy it. He wanted to cover tennis and never got a chance to be a tennis writer. So that is it just a matter of luck how that works out, or did you kind of angle around and get that position, you know, through hard work or suggestions?
Yeah, your suggestion is the right word, I think. It was interesting. I got hired. I worked for a small paper in Baltimore first called Sports First. It only lasted a year. We came out it was an all sports paper. It was a little before its time. It came out right about the same time as USA Today. But what it did was give me great, valuable experience, because you could write anything. And trust, I wouldn't even want to read those stories now. Made a million mistakes, I'm sure, but nobody was really paying attention anyway. But what it did for me was give me a couple of clips. And when the Philadelphia Daily News decided that they needed a full-time horse racing guy when the new Garden State Park was going to open in the spring of 85, I don't know that they even talked to anybody but me. And I was fortunate that I had a couple friends, including a great college friend who worked at the Daily News and recommended me. And then I was here for about a year, and I said to our sports editor, I said, you know, I really like college basketball. If you want to send me some games, I can probably do it. And the next thing you know, they sent me to games, and I'm covering the great Lionel Simmons, one of the last of the 3,000 point scorers at LaSalle, and ended up at my first Final Four in 1992, and then everyone since 1994. So yeah, it was very much a suggestion that got me to do college hoops and horses. And as you guys know, the seasons are perfectly meshed. I mean, the after the Breeders' Cup, college basketball season starts the next week. A month after the Final Four is the Derby, so yeah, it couldn't have worked out much better for me.
Dick, outside of the Smarty Jones story, what are some of the other racing stories that when you think back on your career, you're just never going to forget?
Well, as I wrote in the story, I never had more fun than with the Fleet Alex guys. I mean, they were just Chuck Zachney, who I saw on Thursday night, Joe Liro, Jen Reeves, the whole crowd, just what wonderful people, and it was just a continuous party from Arkansas to Kentucky, Baltimore, and on to New York. And certainly just from a human interest standpoint, and I think I wrote about this, getting beyond the world of sports, the Barbro story touched everybody. And it wasn't – part of it was those of us in the game wondered how great he might have been, because his Derby was easily the best I ever saw live. It was just a remarkable performance. And then the saga after he got hurt in the Preakness – and was he going to make it? Wasn't he? And then the sad ending. But that was a story that resonated. I probably got more comments about some of the Barbro stories than maybe anything I ever did, and emails, because it touched people way outside of horse racing.
Tell me about hanging out with Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, I wasn't in the business. I was really still a kid, but he was absolutely my idol. And before the Foreman fight in Zaire, would have been the summer of 74, two friends of mine and I drove up to Deer Lake in PA. I was still living in Baltimore at the time. Deer Lake, for people that know the geography of Pennsylvania, is in the Poconos. It's about an hour and a half, 2 hours northwest of Philadelphia. And that's where Ali trained. And we went up real early one morning. We were the only ones there. He saw us, treated us like long-lost friends. We actually went in and had breakfast with him, watching tapes of George Foreman fights. And can you imagine trying to do that with a celebrity of his magnitude today? You wouldn't get within 10 miles of him. But, yeah, I'll never forget. And he was absolutely my all-time favorite. And I went down when I was at the Derby this year. I retraced the steps where the funeral went the summer before last and wrote a story about it not long after. I think right about on the year anniversary of Ali's death.
Yeah, he was an amazing human being, and that's you're so right. Like these days, you'd have to get by like 15 guards and all of that. I mean, it's just insane the way it is now. But in the old days, you used to be able to do that. You know, I always tell people, Shoemaker one time followed my brother to his car in the Santa Anita parking lot to sign a photo that's actually hanging in our studio right to my left here. And, you know, nowadays they'd look at you like, are you crazy? I'm not going anywhere with you.
Right. Yeah. Everything in the business is a press conference. It's hard to get to know people. That's one of the reasons I like horse racing so much, because it's the one place where it's still pretty wide open. You go up to a trainer's barn. I mean, I think how great Bob Baffert was during the Triple Crown with American Pharoah. If that had been another sport, it would have been hard to get near him. But he was still, I remember an hour before the Belmont, a bunch of us just standing around the barn talking to him like it was just a regular day. That there's no chance that happens in any other game, none.
Yeah, speaking of that Triple Crown, I love the point that you made in that final column talking about covering the Triple Crown and covering a Philadelphia basketball team winning the national championship. Those were two things that, Dick, you started to wonder if you were ever going to get to cover either one.
Yeah, I was pretty sure I wasn't covering either one. I thought the finish line would get there before either one of those things happened. I think I'd been to Belmont. The first one I went there for a Triple Crown to cover was Ali Sheba in 87. So however many times that was, 9 or 10, that horses had a chance, I'm thinking there's no way this is ever going to happen. So, yeah, to actually be there in June of 2015 and to see it and hear it and feel it, and I stayed pretty late into the night to hang out at the barn and write the column that I think the link was to on the final column that I wrote. That was something. And then, yeah, and you come back 10 months later in April of 2016 and you're sitting there and Villanova's playing. I mean, for me, and I watched a lot of really good Philly college teams, nobody played better than they did for those 3.5 weeks of the NCAA tournament. They were awesome. They were the best team. They deserved to win. And then not only did they win, they went on a last-second shot where the buzzer goes off with the ball in the air. So, yeah, it doesn't get much more dramatic than that.
You know, it hasn't always been about simply just horse racing or college basketball for you. You even had an opportunity to make a trip to Barcelona to cover the Olympics in 1992.
I did. Yeah, I'd only been at the paper for 7 years, and my sports editor then, Mike Rath, who I wrote about right at the top of the story, wonderful guy. He just believed if you worked hard at what you did, you got rewarded with neat events, and certainly that was the best event I ever covered. And I wasn't covering the Dream Team. Our great NBA writer, Phil Jasner, was, but I made sure to go to the last couple of games, and I was there for the gold medal game. And I was there for the 100-meter dash, and I covered some boxing and some swimming and the opening and closing ceremonies. And what I remember most probably about the whole experience was the city. I mean, if anybody ever gets a chance, you want to go to a wonderful, incredible place, go to Barcelona.
Talking with Dick Girardi here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Dick, longtime sports writer for the Philadelphia Daily News. Dick, when you think back on these 30-plus years of covering various sports and covering horse racing, what's the one story or the one column that you might be most proud of?
Yeah, probably one I did. It would be almost 3 years ago now, and I mentioned it in the column. People from Philly will never forget the name Hank Gathers. He was a legendary high school basketball player here, played on a Dobbins Tech team that included Bo Kimble and Doug Overton, all both of whom played in the NBA, were great players. And if people remember, back to the March of 1990, he died on the court playing for Loyola Marymount in the semifinals of his conference tournament out in Los Angeles. And it was a gigantic story here in Philly at the time. And I went back 25 years later in the anniversary in 2015 and just talked to a bunch of people, wandered around, went back, and I covered at the time. I covered the funeral. I covered a lot of it. Went to his gravesite. It was incredibly emotional for the people who were involved then to still talk about it. So that one probably, because it's still so close, it's less than 3 years ago I did it. I remember that one. But, yeah, there are tons of them. When you do 7,000, I remember going up to Canada on the 25th anniversary of Secretariat's Triple Crown to spend 2 or 3 days with Ronnie Turcotte. That was in 1998, and that was something because I went up there thinking I was going to get one story. There's going to be this sad story about this former jockey who was paralyzed, and it wasn't that at all. It was a very upbeat, and anybody that knows Ronnie knows he's an upbeat guy. And so sometimes you go thinking a story is going to be one thing, and it turns out to be totally different.
Yeah, that's always an interesting feeling because you have a concept in your mind when you're going to write something, and then you kind of have to shift gears. How easy is that for you to do?
Yeah, it's funny. I have had a lot of stories where I wrote down 10 things. All right, it's going to be this, this, and this. Ends up being one or two of them, and sometimes none. And yeah, you better be willing to adapt because stuff changes. And if you get locked into a theme, or somebody says, hey, I think it's going to be this. And I was really fortunate over the years. We were very much of a writer's paper, not an editor's paper, where the writers were given free rein. You know, we believe in you. Go get the story. Go write it like you want. So, yeah, that would happen fairly regularly. And it was fine. It was like that's why you ask questions. You find out stuff.
Dick, I know you're going to have plenty of things to keep you busy, as you talked about earlier with your television program, the racing program that airs in the Philadelphia market, and some other things you'll be involved with. But what are you going to miss most about being a sports writer?
Probably just hanging out with folks on the road, people, friends that you get to know, and mostly just the people. But the good thing is, if I want to go to the track, they're going to let me in. If I want to go to a gym, they are definitely letting me in. So, yeah, that's the cool part is that I can still do it. The part I probably won't miss is I'll actually get to, when the game is over, I'll get to walk out of the gym. when the race is over, I'll just get to leave. I haven't done that very often. That's when we start to work, when everybody else is leaving.
Yeah, well said. Dick Girardi, a stellar career, more than 3 decades of covering thoroughbred racing and sports in the Philadelphia market. And Dick, nobody's done it better. So congratulations. Enjoy your retirement. And we can't thank you enough for spending a little time with us here on HRN this morning.
You got it. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. And Dick Girardi, like all of our guests who appear on the program, is indeed going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Don't forget, you can wear what you love at embracetherace.com. And by the way, a great place to go for the horse racing fan on your list. If you want to get them something nice for the holidays, head over to embracetherace.com.
And nice is the operative word there. They have fantastic merchandise.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. Absolutely can't go wrong. How great is Dick Girardi?
Yeah, fantastic. Got to say I'm a little jealous. I love to write, and I don't get to do it very much anymore. But, yeah, that's fantastic.
I could spend hours just listening to him tell stories. And we just scratched the surface, really.
Right? Oh, yeah.
When you think about, what did he say, 7,000 stories?
Yeah, it's interesting because when I read his final column, I was a little disappointed because it was so short.
I wanted it to keep going.
It was like the end of a good book. You know, you hate to get to the end of a good book. It becomes like your friend. And at the end of that column, I go, man, he didn't really cover very much there.
Yeah,
there was plenty more to say.
Yeah, I wanted more for sure. But outstanding career, and our thanks to Dick for taking a little time here this morning. All right, we're going to get to another break. When we come back, we'll tell you what's ahead in the second half of the show. We'll update you on the results of our poll question at HRRN on Twitter, and we'll tell you more about how you can win a trip for two to next year's Florida Derby. This is the Equine Forum on HRN, your home for racing's biggest events.
Castleton Lions, home to multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and blue-blooded sprinter Justin Phillip, who was recently represented by his first stakes winner at Belmont Park.
Down to the line, what a catch takes the Rockville Center over Morning Breeze.
That game stakes victory by What a Catch comes on the heels of Justin Phillips' daughter, Upset Brewing, putting in a strong runner-up finish in the $100,000 debutante at Churchill Downs. And while Justin Philip continues his fast start, seven-time Grade 1 winner Gio Ponti continues to prove his offspring can run on any surface at any distance.
And Sir Dudley Diggs from Amiz Gizmo. Sir Dudley Diggs has won the Queen's Plate.
Dre Fong pulls clear of Masochistic. Mind Your Biscuits finishing with a flourish, but Dre Fong's the leader. Dre Fong has won.
Gio Ponti and Justin Philip standing at Castleton Lions. Visit CastletonLions.com.
Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwich is Ed speaking.
Yes, I need a sandwich delivery right away.
What kind of sandwich?
I don't care. Just get it to 215 Elm Street right now.
I'm on my way!
Jimmy John's.
Thanks for getting here so fast.
You're welcome, sir. Here's your sandwich. By the way, did you know your house is on fire?
That's why I called Jimmy John's.
Fire makes you hungry?
No, I knew you'd get here fast. Grab a bucket.
We're going to need more than two guys, sir.
You're right. What'll we do?
Leave it to me, sir.
Hello,
boss. Send everyone you got to 215 Elm.
Roger.
Doesn't matter what kind of sandwich, sir. I'll explain later.
Roger.
Thank you, sir.
Jimmy John's. Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Fire department.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your...
It's okay, Captain. We got it handled. Care for a sandwich?
Thanks, but tell me something.
Shoot.
Why didn't you call the fire department first?
I did.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com. Airdrie Studs Summer Front, a gorgeous millionaire son of the Great War Front, has wasted no time in establishing himself as a major force in the commercial marketplace. Known on the racetrack for his electric turn of foot, Summer Front's first crop weanlings averaged over $100,000 with a sensational $100,000 median at the Keeneland November sale, all from an initial stud fee of just $10,000. Airdrie Studs Summer Front. Think about it.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy John's.
It's a tight pack, and it's wide open, and there's now just two furlongs to go. And here's Dynamic Sky, who comes up to grab the lead. Wireless Future, the whip is out. Bullard's Alley keeps on grinding on the outside, and it's now taken over. It's Bullard's Alley in front. Roman Approval's coming down the center of the track. Tiz Town and John's Kitten rush there at the eighth pole. They've got three lengths to make up. 16th to go. Bullard's Alley clear by two. Roman Approval. John's Kitten clear sailing on the far outside, but it's too late. Bullard's Alley. Impressive in winning the Louisville Handicap by 2.5. John's Kitten, Roman Approval, and Tiz Town.
Travis Stone with the call of that Louisville Handicap. That was in 2016, last year, and Bullard's Alley getting the victory. That was the final Greatest Stakes victory for jockey Francisco Torres, who retired recently, and he retires with nearly 3,200 career victories, and his story is simply remarkable. We're going to visit with Cisco coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern. Stay with us. That's only 4 or 5 minutes away. Going to also visit with Terry Birch in the second half of the show. Terry is the interim director of the Equine Industry Program at the University of Louisville. She'll join us right around 9:25 Eastern time. Told you that we were going to update you on our poll question this morning, and we threw this one out there at the top of the show. You can continue to vote at HRN on Twitter. You can do it Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook as well. And with the Eclipse Awards coming up next month, we want to know which two-year-old gets your vote for Eclipse Champion Juvenile. And we gave you three choices. You can also select the other category and specify one of the other two-year-olds that you feel is worthy. But here are your three choices: Good Magic, Bolt Doro, or Catholic Boy. Jude, who do you think's winning?
Good Magic.
Close. It's closer than you would think, right? Very close. You and I both talked about it at the top of the show. Bolt Doro, probably the most accomplished of those three, at least in terms of his overall body of work. Well, he is slightly in front of Good Magic in the voting. 43% of HRN Nation saying that Bolt Doro should be your juvenile champion. 39% weighing in for Good Magic and 19% for Catholic Boy at this point. And how about this? Not one vote in the other category. So it looks like we did a pretty good job picking out the top three.
Yeah. Well, I like Bolt Doro, but I just thought the public might gravitate to the Breeders' Cup winner. And you can make a case for both of them. But Yeah, that's interesting. I'm happy to hear Bolt Thoreau has as many fans as he does.
Yeah. Nose to nose, nip and tuck down to the wire right now. It's Bolt Thoreau, good magic. You can go ahead and weigh in and cast your vote at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Hey, last weekend was a huge weekend for the Stallions at Coolmore America as they accounted for four of the stakes races for two-year-olds. That's right. Uncle Mo led the way with impressive Grade 1 Starlet winner Dream Team at Los Alamitos, and Miss Momentum, who dominated the Hutt Hutt Stakes at Gulfstream Park by 8 3/4 lengths. Also at Gulfstream, Diamond Oops, a two-year-old by Looking at Lucky, picked up his second stakes win in the Buffalo Man Stakes, and Speed Franco sprinted clear to a six-length win in the Pulpit Stakes. Speed Franco, the third stakes winner from the first crop of two-year-olds by Declaration of War, and he'll have over 130 U.S.-bred two-year-olds hitting the track next year that were bred, how about this, at a $40,000 stud fee. For more information on the Coolmore Sires, all you have to do is visit coolmore.com. Big weekend.
Yeah, it's a lot of good racing.
Uncle Mo and everybody else.
Uncle Mo.
Every time we do a commercial for Coolmore and we talk about Uncle Mo, I think back to that day watching him win at Saratoga and you and I looking at each other going, what on earth was that?
It was an unbelievable race. I'll never forget that race either. And I was texting a friend of mine in Great Britain right after that race. Said, pull this replay up.
Yeah, don't miss this horse. Yeah. Uncle Mo and everyone else for sure. All right, we're going to get to a short station ID. We'll pause 10 seconds. We'll come back, and we will kick off hour number two. It's a very busy morning here on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is Forever Unbridled. Abel Tasman charging but running out of time. Forever Unbridled's going to do it. Forever Unbridled has won the Breeders' Cup Distaff. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Originating from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
Shaman Ghost is trying to get into second, then Neolithic. Back forth is Noble Bird, followed by Keen Ice. But what a race! What a sport! What a horse! Arrogate romps in the Pegasus. He won it by 3.5.
They're into the stretch. Good Magic's in front. Good Magic pulls away from Solo Mini, and Bolt Thoreau will not get there today. Good Magic's going to win his first race, and he's going to do it in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Baron and Pontiff, that's Mike Penna and Jude Feld. We are with you once again in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Jimmy John's freaky fast, freaky good, and that's what we're trying to do for you here this morning. We've been moving along pretty quickly. We're trying to be freaky good at it, too. And, Jude, when you have guests like we had in the first half of the show, it makes it kind of easy.
Yeah, it was very entertaining for me, anyway. I hope the listeners enjoyed it. I'm sure they did. But, yeah, it doesn't get much better than a new jock who calls you sir and Dick Girardi, who everybody should call sir.
I told Wes Hamilton, 19-year-old apprentice, that he had to call me sir when he came on the show.
Yeah.
I said, look, kid, here's the deal. It's my show. Let's remember that. Let's get one thing straight.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because people oftentimes laugh at me. Like, I've been involved with Michael House for over 30 years, and I still call him Mr. House.
Yeah.
People look at me strangely. Why do you call him Mr. House? I said, I've always been like that. I always called my owners Mr. or Mrs. And never by their first name as a rule. But I learned that from Sandy Hawley. Sandy Hawley, he called Bobby Frankel Mr. Frankel.
Yeah, even to this day, Sandy is ridiculously respectful of everybody that he runs into, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just
yeah.
who he is, and that's how he was brought up. And
yeah.
It's not a bad thing.
The first time he rode for me, he called me Mr. Feld. So then the next time he came to the barn, I told him, I said, listen, I appreciate what you do.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool, but you don't have to call me Mr. Feld. You can just call me Jude, you know?
Hey,
and,
Jude.
And he, now he does. He actually calls me Jude. So.
Well, if you did miss any portion of the first half of the show, our interview with 19-year-old apprentice jockey Wes Hamilton or with legendary sports writer Dick Girardi, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast at your leisure. You do that, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And while you're on our website, hey, register to win a trip for two to the 2018 Florida Derby by playing in our Florida Derby Challenge. That Road to the Florida Derby Challenge is available now. Simply go to our site and sign up, and each week you'll come back to the site and you will select the horse you feel will win the designated contest race from Gulfstream Park. This afternoon's race is the 10th race on the card. It's the Tropical Turf Stakes, has a post time of 4:37 Eastern. You have to have your wagers in or your selection in a half hour prior to that post time. So head there now. You can see all the rules. You can see the leaderboard. Plenty of time to get in on this contest. It runs through the Fountain of Youth, but don't delay. Get in today and register to win a trip for two to the 2018 Florida Derby. Well, we talked about 19-year-old apprentice jockey Wes Hamilton, and we told you he joined us in the first half of the show. Now we turn our attention to a veteran jockey who has just announced he will hang up his saddle, and he will focus on becoming a jock's agent. We'll talk more about that as we move throughout the interview here with jockey Francisco Torres, one of the nicest and classiest guys you'll meet in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Cisco, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Mike.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And look, I mean, you finally make the decision that now's the time to hang him up after nearly 3,200 career victories. Why was this the right time, Cisco?
Well, I don't know if you've realized or seen that I had a bad accident here in New Orleans last year. I broke my neck, and consequently I had eight screws put in my neck. And, you know, I was against doctors' wishes. I came back. I wasn't ready to quit or hang it up yet. And again, I said, you know, I still had it in my heart, and I wasn't ready to retire. So then I came back again, and I came back strong. Actually, the first 10 horses that I rode, I went five races, and you know, I thought everything was great. You know, it wasn't in my mind about getting hurt again. And usually when you endure something like I did, a serious of an injury as I did, usually it's about a year, 2 years down the road when you endure another spill or another mishap. And, you know, it came quicker than I expected it. I had a horse snap his leg with me on the Thanksgiving handicap. On Thanksgiving, and it's like the light bulb went on. You know, every horse that I rode after that, it was on my mind. What if he falls, or another horse falls with me, and I'm not as fortunate? You know, to be honest with you, I didn't want to end up paraplegic or dead, if that. And so, you know, I thought it was time to quit and hang it up and move on. You know, I've had a wonderful career, blessed career. The industry's been super to me. I have, you know, no regrets. You know, I'm walking away on my terms, and it's time to see what the next chapter of my life brings.
Yeah, eight screws is a good sign that you know, maybe it is time to hang it up. And it was interesting this morning. We had Wes Hamilton on, who just won his first two races. Steve Hamilton's son, and he was describing the feeling that he got when he won his first race, and it just made me think of all the riders that we've talked to over the years who are so addicted to that adrenaline rush, and it's so hard to understand sometimes why guys get hurt and they can't wait to get back in the saddle. Talk about that a minute, and what's so addicting about riding races that would make you put your livelihood, your life on the line just to get that feeling?
Well, for me, it was the love of the game, love of the sport, love of the horse. And once you do taste that first win, there is no feeling, there's not enough words to explain it. It's just, you know, it surpasses any kind of drug, any kind of high that you can imagine. Once it's in your heart, once you taste that, it's an ongoing thing, and there's no feeling. There's not enough words to really explain it. It's an adrenaline, and believe me, as many spills as I've had, I've broken my neck four times to kind of give you an idea of what I've gone through, I've come back. You know, again, they didn't expect me to come back after this spill, and still I had it in my heart, I wasn't ready to quit. But yeah, no, once you get that taste of that first win, there's not enough words to explain it.
Francisco Torres with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Four broken necks. Cisco, that has to be some kind of record.
I don't tell you what, to be honest with you, I don't know of anybody else that's ever broken their neck and come back as like I have. So I'm not saying that to impress anybody or just but it's just it goes to show you how far somebody that loves the sport, that they're willing to put their whole life on it, you know, through. And you know what, it's for 32 years that's all I've done, and like I said, no regrets. I'd do it again if I could tomorrow. But you know what? To be honest with you, really looking at my situation, I'm walking away, and I do mean that literally. I'm glad that I'm walking away on my terms instead of being rolled around in a wheelchair for the rest of my life.
Yeah, Cisco. As I was getting ready for the show, I found an article that was written about you after your first broken neck in 1991. It was in the Chicago Tribune. Bob Sakamoto wrote the piece, and it also documented your upbringing and the way you were raised and got started. And it wasn't the nicest of neighborhoods where you grew up, right?
No. Matter of fact, it was probably one of the roughest areas in Chicago. And to this day, my mom and dad still live there. And I go back and. And believe me, I walk the streets at night, you know, to say to go get some milk at the grocery store for my mom. It doesn't bother me to walk around there. We grew up there, but yeah, no, it wasn't one of the nicest neighborhoods.
It's amazing, you know, that you and your brother Javier, you guys are two of the finest guys that you could find in racing. And you know, you came from such a place that was, very, very difficult, and people getting shot and all that. It's amazing that you guys ended up to be the fine gentleman that you are.
You know what? I have to give thanks to my folks for that. We were raised properly, I believe. And you know what? Everything, like you guys were, I just heard you guys were talking about yes, sir, and yes, ma'am. That's the way we were raised. And you know what I do. I got some fine brothers. Javier, you know, he's the clerk of scales at Churchill, and Keeneland, you know, and he's, you know, he's a good guy and a gentleman. And I have also my little brother Romero Torres, that, you know, he rode for years, and now he's retired. He's not riding no longer, but he's a valet at Indiana Downs and gallops for Amos, you know, in the mornings. And, you know, and he's a gentleman himself. I'm blessed with having some real good brothers. And just thankful to my folks. They raised us properly. Everything was yes, sir, yes, ma'am. And that's the way we were raised. Respect everybody. Treat everybody the same. And treat everybody as you wanted to be, as you wanted to be treated. So, thanks. My hat's off to my folks.
I mentioned, Cisco, that you retire with nearly 3,200 career victories and all of the different riding titles and accolades that you received. When you think back on that career, tell me about some of the moments that are always going to be memorable for you.
Well, my memorable was, one, come to be leading rider at Arlington Park. I remember growing up, my dad would go to Arlington Park before it burned down, and I don't know if you guys knew before it burned down, they had staircases that led up to about the fourth floor. And I'd run up and down them stairs, and I'd tell my dad, I'm going to ride here. I'm going to be, I don't remember telling him that I was going to be leading rider, but I remember that I said, Dad, I'm going to ride here at Arlington Park, you know. And one of those, that was one of my most memorable accolades of being lean rider at Arlington Park, that was one of my most memorable times and accolades that I can say that was one of my moments. And then also riding the Derby. I rode two Kentucky Derbies, been all over the world. I was in Saudi Arabia for 5 years riding for the King Crown Prince. It's been a blessed career, a wonderful career. I think back now that being with all my injuries and all my my times off, which I don't know if you've added up, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years, kind of with injuries and sidelines, and you know how many races would I had won, or you know, or who's to say, but. You know, again, 30 plus years of riding, I'm not walking away mad or upset. I'm walking away with my head up high and, let's turn the page. And right now, my idea of what I'm going to do now is I'm trying to get an apprentice. I'm looking for an apprentice just so I can mentor them, you know. These kids nowadays, they kind of get thrown to the wolves, and then you're on your own, you know, fend for yourself. And I'd like to mentor an apprentice and kind of bring them through the ropes and the ranks, and kind of, like I said, mentor them and help them along.
Yeah, that would be a tremendous advantage. You know, over the years, people would call me that were going to run horses in Chicago, and they'd say, who should I put on my horse? And I'd tell them, Cisco Torres. So now I'm going to put it on you. Who's the jockey that I should tell them now to put on their horse? Somebody that's going to have your work ethic and try the way that you do, give them their best shot to win. Who's that jockey in Chicago now?
In Chicago?
Yeah.
You know what? There's a kid that I've been watching. His last name is Diego. And he's coming up. You know, he looks like he's a promising upcoming apprentice. If it's in Chicago, that's who I'd suggest to put on. Now I'm trying to get a kid up here that's coming that's went through Wesley Ward's kind of schooling, and I'm in the process of see if I can get him here to New Orleans and get him going.
Cisco, when you talk about mentoring a young rider, what are some of the things that you'll look to teach them, and maybe what's a little bit different about riding races now than when you first started?
Well, the first thing I'm looking at is he's got to be a natural, you know, he doesn't have any problem with his weight, because that's one of the main things that, you know, their careers become shorter than what they want to because of their weight. So that's, and also somebody that listens. You know, you get these kids nowadays that they think that they know it all, and regardless of how much you try to help them, they think that they go out there and when you try to help them out, it goes in one ear and out the other. So a kid that wants it and listens is a key to this game, to be honest with you.
Hey, I just thought of something. You can eat just about anything you want now, can't you?
Yeah, I'm done watching what I eat. But you know what? I've always been light. I've really never had any problems with watching my weight. It was just so now it's the only thing that I've told a few people. I really don't want to buy any extra clothes. I want to keep the clothes that I have. So I'm just kind of try to keep the same eating habits as I have been while I've been riding.
All right, but now you can splurge a little. So what are a couple of the things that you might cheat with and have that maybe you couldn't when you were riding?
Cheesecake.
That's a great answer.
It's all about the cheesecake for Cisco Torres, and looking forward to seeing him in his new career as a jocks agent. Cisco, as I mentioned at the top of the interview, you're one of the classiest guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing. You're a great ambassador. Keep things rolling, and all the best in your new career and in your retirement. We'll be cheering for you.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure.
All right, Cisco Torres here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Happy holidays, Cisco.
Likewise.
All right, and of course, like all of our guests who appear on the program, Cisco will receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at embracetherace.com.
Yeah, there's a guy who embraced his passion, right?
No, unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, that story, if you Google Francisco Torres retirement, this will pull up. I think that's how I got to it. It's a Chicago Tribune story called Chills, Spills, Can't Keep Jockey Down. And it's from 1991, his first time he broke his neck in that spill. But then it documents his background and his upbringing and, you know, literally seeing people be shot on his street as he's sitting out on his porch. And he can't say anything about it because of the gangs. And it's remarkable to see where he started, where he is today.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And what a great family. Obviously, his parents have a fantastic method for raising kids because his family's unbelievable.
Yep, great stuff. All right, we're going to get to another break. We will come back. It's your Blood Horse News Update, and we'll visit with Terry Birch, who is the interim director of the Equine Industry Program at the University of Louisville. That's next, right here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Spendthrift Farm presents Gormley, a dominant front-runner stakes winner in his second start at two.
Gormley with a two-and-a-half-length lead. Gormley wins the front-runner.
A $1 million Santa Anita Derby winner at three.
Gormley takes the lead, and Gormley wins the Santa Anita Derby.
He joins Orb as Malibu Moon's only multiple Grade 1 winning millionaires at stud. Gormley, new for 2018 to Spendthrift Farm.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
And the rest are a minute away, but McKenzie has them beaten to a frazzle. A very impressive debut score by McKenzie, taking it by 5 lengths.
McKenzie's powerful debut victory on October 28th at Santa Anita resulted in a 99 buyer speed figure, the highest debut buyer for a 2-year-old in 4 years. The son of Darley Stallion Street Sense returned to take the Grade 1 Los Alamitos Futurity this past weekend, making him your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Sense, the first horse to win both the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and Kentucky Derby. McKenzie became the 6th Grade 1 winner on dirt for Street Sense. Only Tappet, Curlin, and Darley Stallion Bernardini have more. To learn more about Street Sense and all the Darley Stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He broke really sharp that day, and it was a horse that had a lot of speed, groovy, and that to be a champion sprinter. You know, I just had in my mind, I'm just going to try to stop him and wait there, and when I got to, I think from the 3.5 mile ball, Groovy got tired, and I remember Craig Perez, I was in the inside, and, you know, he said to me, well, I'm dead, and I went by him, and you know, he kept going strong all the way down the stretch, and he won the race, and it was one of those moments, again, that you never forget, and like I said before, it's like a dream come true.
That's jockey Alex Solis, Hall of Famer, who recently announced his retirement. Alex talking about winning the Preakness Stakes, and he told so many other stories that were simply outstanding on our Jock Talk show this past week, which is presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. You can head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast of that program and all of our shows at horseracingradio.net. How classy is Alex Solis. You go from an interview with Francisco Torres to a soundbite with Alex Solis, two of the classiest guys in racing.
Yeah, and Alex certainly one of the hardest working jockeys ever. I mean, I've been over to his house where he's riding his Equisizer, watching films of racing, and riding along with a race that he won or a race that he was involved in. And it's just amazing to watch the guy work. You know, he'd be out on the track running before the races. A tremendous work ethic. Out every morning working horses. I mean, the guy's really in a class by himself when it came to working at his craft. And you know, it's he's another guy that just rode tremendous races, and glad to see him walk away on his own terms.
Yeah, again, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast of that program and all of our talk shows. They're there for you on our site. This past April, a good friend of the show, good friend of mine, Tim Capps, passed away. He was the director of the equine industry program at the University of Louisville, and the interim director at this point is Terry Birch, who is kind enough now to join us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Terry, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks a lot. Happy to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you on board and looking forward to talking about the program. But I mentioned Tim Capps, who appeared on this show many, many times, and I had the privilege of getting to know over the years. And, boy, you are doing a heck of a job over there, but big shoes to fill, Terry.
Big shoes. Tim was a huge personality, and I knew Tim way back when he was with Matchmaker and some of the other things that he had done in his life. And we miss him. The kids really miss him. He was just one story after the other, and he brought so much real life to the program. And that's hard to make up. But we're doing a good job, I think, and coming on. And we all have kind of different backgrounds that are with the program. And the great thing is now we just finished the strategic plan that's going to our new dean this week, and then we will start searching for a permanent director and hope to have somebody in place in July, as well as an economist that we want to come back in and do get our research part of our program back up and running.
Well, Terry, you're no stranger to the equine industry program at U of L. If I'm not mistaken, you were, what, the first person hired for the program when it started in 87?
Exactly. It was my dream job. I couldn't believe it. I'd been talking horses my whole life, and finally somebody was going to pay me to do it. So I've been there for 30 years. So I was there at the beginning when we started. I started teaching. So I've taught a lot of the classes. I've developed a lot of the classes. I started working on the stewards program in the first July that I was there, and some of our faculty in the other departments helped us put together the exams for that. And I'm still working on that, and I did my first solo one this past November for a continuing education, and then I got a full school coming up in June with another continuing education. So, yeah, so I've been there a long time, have a lot of history, have done a lot of things with the program. I've been like their jack-of-all-trades person.
How cool is that, starting out, you know, as you say, with your dream job, and now you're in the top spot? I mean, what's that like?
Well, it's really, it's not been a bad transition, because I've been there from the beginning, and I started with it, and being the only one there, you learn a lot, and I've seen so many changes. That's really the cool part, is I remember when they were looking at legislation for telephone wagering and then simulcasting, intertrack wagering, all kinds of wild stuff when casinos were coming on. So I have a lot of wealth of experience. Timing is like the hardest thing for me, because not only do I teach, I have another position there in the program as well as now interim director. And then I'm raising manager for a small breeding and racing operation called Stoneway Farm. And so that makes it, time management has been really difficult and trying to get that. So I've been like a workaholic person for this past semester, putting about 10 to 12 hours a day, 8 hours on Saturdays and 5 hours on Sundays. So that's been the craziest part for me, is trying to just time manage and get everything done that needs to be done for the program and the kids, and I'm starting some new initiatives, trying to get our students out to do a lot more internships. As a matter of fact, for my class I had in the fall is one that Tim used to teach, and it's an organization administration class, and so I also did some fundraising for Backside Learning Center. So I involved my class where they had to do so many hours, and they came to our big event at the racetrack and helped us put together and put on that event. And so it gave them a real opportunity to get out and to experience real-life interventions for things that happen on the racetrack with the backside workers and that kind of thing. So I'm trying to bring more of that kind of stuff back to the classroom and things that I used to do when I first started there before I got so busy doing so many other things. So I'm trying to bring back some of those kinds of programs where our students can get really involved and initiated right at the beginning, because there's so much to learn. You can't really get all of that in the classroom. So the more outside experience they can have through the classroom, then I think the better off they are once they graduate and look for jobs when they get done.
I'm talking with Terry Birch, the interim director of the Equine Industry Program at the University of Louisville. She's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Terry, for people that may not be familiar with the program and may not even be aware that Louisville offers an equine industry program, explain the program and explain how people can to learn more about it.
Well, they can go to our website at louisville.edu/equine. We also have a Facebook page that we're up getting ready to get up and running. It's not as active as we want it right now, but we're working on that and redesigning that. But the program is structured, and it's really interesting the way this program was put together. In the 80s, when the industry had a big crash because the oil market had crashed, Kentucky's horse industry was devastated. We lost a lot of farms. The tax laws changed. It made it very difficult for people to stay in the industry with giant investments because it's very expensive to do that. So the legislature decided that, you know, this is our signature industry. We need someone to come in and teach our kids that. So that's how our program got developed. And so we are actually in the statute for Kentucky law, and we started actually our kickoff was in July of 1986. I didn't come until April of 87. So it's a four-year business degree. Our major is equine business. We have 30 mandatory hours in the major, but there's a total, and those are equine classes, but there's a total of 127 hours. Now, we're getting ready to go through some restructuring at the university where they want all of our degrees to go down to 120. So we're looking at non-equine classes that we can kind of cull out of that program to do that. But the program's been really successful quietly. Over these 30 years, we've had a lot of great, great students that have come in and are involved in the industry from across the country. We just had our first graduate from China. He just is finishing up. Matter of fact, he graduated yesterday, and he's going on to do a master's at Pepperdine University. And we've had students from Spain, Puerto Rico, Canada, France, Japan, so all over the place. So we're kind of a hidden gem, I would say.
Yeah, you have the University of Arizona program that seems to get all the ink, and you guys do a great job up there, and especially, you know, for people that are from this area. I mean, you don't need to go all the way to Arizona to get a fantastic education. Your program is really fantastic.
Thank you. No, and we're really excited. And like I said, the legislator made us, and some of them had been out to the Arizona seminar that they do every year. And then that's why they decided that we should have that, because they don't have really a racing industry out there. And we are surrounded in Louisville, and we've got graduates that work for Churchill Downs, for Keeneland, for a lot of the farms. Matter of fact, I'm on my way over to Lexington to look at some of the stallions. And one of our graduates is at TaylorMade. That's Liam Benson. And he got out last year, and he's working for TaylorMade now. And then I'm heading to Darley. And Dean Rothmeyer's one of our other students, and he's been out for a long time and has worked with Darley for a long time. And he was our first, actually, graduate that made it to the Darley Flying Start program. And we've had three others. One is just finishing up this summer. with that program. So, like I said, we're like a really well-kept secret, and we're trying to do a lot more. That's one of the things I'm working on right now is I'm working with some advertising companies, and I'm putting together a big marketing plan that's getting ready to kick off. We did a test run during Breeders' Cup, and we got a lot of hits on our website and a lot of informational requests from that. And so that's one of the big things that I'm working on right now is trying to do a little bit more bragging about our program.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Terry Birch with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And Terry, you know, all of our guests who come on the show receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. And so we always like to ask people what it is about the sport that makes them embrace the race. So I'll ask you that question. What is it that makes you embrace the race and embrace the sport?
Well, my significant other tells me I have horse blood running through my veins. I've always been passionate about the horse industry. I grew up with horses as a kid. I got my first one when I was 14, and I got an off-the-track thoroughbred, and I have been bitten by the bug. My parents used to have fabulous derby parties. They took me to the races. My dad took me when I was little tiny girl to Miles Park, which was in Louisville and burned down. He took me to Churchill. I've just had the horse passion, and I love racing. I love when Stoneway's racing. I get right on the rail, and I love to hear them on the turn for home when the thundering of the hoofs come down. I tell everybody I like to get dirt thrown in my face. I just love to be right there for that. Matter of fact, we've got 5 races today, so I mean, I get my heart pounds when they're coming down the stretch when we have a horse running and you see the babies born and they grow up and then they become graded stakes winner. There's no bigger thrill. I don't know how else to explain it except for it's my passion and I love it. And I don't know how I would get along without horses. I've had them since I was 14, with the exception of one of my show horses died and it took me 2 weeks to get a new one. And so then when I moved back to Louisville, I was in a racing partnership with several of the other professors at the university. And then I met Jim Stone, and then we've built a little empire of racehorses, and we've had some great ones. And the fun part for me now is a lot of the students I recruit, they see some of our horses. They have pictures of Stonetastic and Encryption, and they send them to me. And then when they get to meet them in person, when they come to the university, it's just then I get to share everything that I love so much with these new kids coming in, and it just builds all the excitement again for me. I'm just addicted. It's my addiction.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, well, Terry, I can tell you this. If you ever decide to give up the gig over at U of L, number one, you'll probably have a career on radio because you're very well-spoken. And number two, I think you might want to go for the position of national marketing manager for the sport of thoroughbred racing, because if you could bottle what you just described, that we would have no problem getting people out to the races and betting on races and being around this sport.
Well, we wouldn't. And one of my favorite things to do, because I go to the track, I'm a track junkie too. In the mornings, we've got 5 trainers right now, and a couple of them I'm so fortunate are at Churchill, Neil Howard and Buff Bradley. But all my new students, when they come to the university, I pick them up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I take them to the backside. And then I get to, you know, show them all the excitement, because a lot of people, they go to the front side of the racetrack, but they never see it. And then a lot of them have gotten positions on the backside. And so it's just like this big revolving door of excitement. And I've got a girl coming in next year from Pennsylvania, and she's followed Stonetastic. So she sent me a bunch of pictures. I've talked to her mother the last week about 5 times on the phone, and she's just told me how thrilling and exciting. And then when you can share that with people, you know, that have your own passion, it's very exciting. And one of the things that I was just looking at yesterday, because one of our graduates also is editor-in-chief for the Pollock Report, Scott Jagow, and they had gone down to the big Caribbean race down at Gulfstream, and just some of the video that they showed and how exciting and passionate everybody is when they come up and look at the races. And that's how I feel every day. And when we've got, like I said, I'm going to look at stallions right now to look to see what would nick with our mares. And then when the babies come, and Stonetastic's got a candy ride coming this spring, and All Chocolate has got her first foal coming. And it's just so exciting to see them. And then it's just the big dream. And one of our problems that we have is that how do you cull and how do you sell when everything is potential big stakes winner, you know? And it's just, it's very exciting, and I just love it. I just absolutely am ate up with it, and can't think of anything I'd rather do. And that's why I've been there for 30 years. And it's just every day, and when you get to share that with young people, it just starts it all over again.
Yeah, very well said. Terry Birch, the interim director at the Equine Industry Program at the University of Louisville. Terry, can't thank you enough for spending a little time with us here this morning. Happy holidays. Enjoy your time with the stallions later today. And thank you for all your support of what we do here on the network. And we'll look forward to catching up with you soon.
That's wonderful. I really enjoyed it. And thanks for having me on. I appreciate that so much.
All right. Thanks, Terry. Terry Birch here on HRRN. Yeah, great program. They do a tremendous job, and that was a massive loss when Tim Capps passed away earlier this year. But Terry doing a great job keeping the ball rolling and keeping the momentum going, and really building on what was Tim's vision.
Yeah, that passion really comes through. I mean, talk about somebody that loves the game. I mean, she might love horse racing more than I do.
Yeah. She sold me on the sport again. I always loved it, but I love it even more now. Just outstanding. All right, it is time for your Blood Horse news update and a look at the top headlines from BloodHorse.com. Well, here's a good one for you. We told you about that Pegasus World Cup coming up at the end of January. Toast of New York is now confirmed for the Pegasus World Cup. Our good friend Dean Reeves of Reeves Thoroughbred Racing confirmed on December 15th that himself, R.A. Hill Stable, and Eric Young have reached a deal with Al Shakab Racing to start multiple Grade 1 plays Toast of New York in the $16 million Pegasus World Cup Invitational at Gulfstream Park on January 27th. Trained by Jamie Osborne for Al Shakab, Toast of New York recently returned from a three-year layoff to win a mile-and-a-quarter race at England's Lingfield Park Racecourse on December 6th in his first start since running second by a nose to Bayern in the 2014 Breeders' Cup Classic. Hey, don't forget that the 2018 Blood Horse calendars are the perfect gift for any horse lover. The 13-month wall calendar features a full-page calendar and photograph for every single month. It's the gift you'll enjoy and use every day. Visit shop.bloodhorse.com to order yours today. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the big racing day at Gulfstream Park, and we'll get you set for what's going to be a busy run on the Horse Racing Radio Network in 2018. This is the Equine Forum on HRN, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gulfstream's championship meet is in full stride with a record 94 stakes races worth $28.6 million in purses. This afternoon's card features five graded stakes: the Rampart, Harlan's Holiday, Sugar Swirl, Tropical Turf, and My Charmer. Come out early and enjoy breakfast at Gulfstream every Saturday from 8 to 10:30, and be sure to reserve your seats now for the $16 million Pegasus World Cup on January 27th. For more information, visit GulfstreamPark.com.
After siring the winners of last year's Grade 1 Test Stakes and Humana Distaff, Flatter is having another banner year in 2017. Recent stars include graded stakes winners Flatline and Favorable Outcome, plus multiple graded stakes winner West Coast, who defeated this year's Kentucky Derby, Preakness, Belmont, and Haskell winners in the Grade 1 Travers. Flatter, the successful son of AP Envy, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
Hey, it's Corey Lannery. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
They're at the top of the lane in Photobird. Drifts out again, but he's hanging on. Destine, oh, they're brushing each other with an eighth of a mile to go. But Destine has still been handwritten by Johnny Velasquez. And it's Destine in front. In Photobird runs a big one down at the rail, but Destine has the advantage. And Destine and John Velasquez have won today's marathon stakes from Infotabad. Hard Ace has had to settle for third, then Noble Neck, S-Ray Carter, Ground Rules, Arcanova, and Dresden Hermes.
Trevor Denman with the call of that marathon stakes, grade two at Del Mar back on November 3rd. Destin, he was best that day, but he wasn't in the Clark Handicap on November 24th. He finished sixth that afternoon, but he's 5-2 on the morning line in this afternoon's Harlan's Holiday Stakes at Gulfstream Park. That's a prep for the Pegasus World Cup on January 27th. Of course, the Pegasus World Cup begins our Saturdays at Gulfstream broadcast series in 2018, the third consecutive year we brought you exclusive radio coverage of Gulfstream's biggest stakes races every Saturday. It also kicks off our 2018 broadcast season here on the network, so you want to make sure that you check out our website in the coming weeks for our 2018 broadcast schedule. Mike Penn and Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Hey, did you know that last weekend was a massive weekend for the Stallions at Coolmore America? They accounted for four of the stakes races for two-year-olds. Uncle Mo led the way with impressive grade one starlet winner Dream Team at Los Alamitos, and Miss Momentum, who dominated the Hutt Hutt Stakes at Gulfstream Park by 8 3/4 lengths. Also at Gulfstream, you had Diamond Oops, a two-year-old by Looking at Lucky, who picked up his second stakes win in the Buffalo Man Stakes, and Speed Franco, who sprinted clear to a sixth-length win in the Pulpit Stakes. Speed Franco, the third stakes winner from the first crop of two-year-olds by declaration of war, and he'll have over 130 U.S.-bred two-year-olds hitting the track next year. They were all bred at a $40,000 stud fee. For more information, all you have to do is visit coolmore.com. All right, Pontiff, some big racing coming up at Gulfstream today, big racing at Remington tomorrow. Where do you want to start?
Well, we can talk about Gulfstream first, I guess, since you brought
the,
it up.
The Destin clip?
Yeah.
Hey, and by the way, how hot is Todd Pletcher right now
at Gulfstream Park? It's Gulfstream Park. It's going to be renamed Pletcher Park before too long.
The guys en fuego. Absolutely unreal. Johnny V going to ride Destin today, and again, your morning line favorite for that Harlan's Holiday.
Yeah, the Harlan's Holiday is always a big race, and Destin, you know, he's a horse that really appreciates longer distances than a mile and a 16th. He's going to get a lot of betting action because he's a classy horse and got a lot of talent, but, you know, in the Clark, it was a mile and an eighth. That was too short for him, really. He's much better a mile and a quarter and farther.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, at this short distance today, a mile and a 16th, is he a horse that, as a short price, we can play against and take a shot at beating?
I mean, he won the Tampa Bay Derby going a mile and a 16th, but since then he's excelled at much longer distances. I don't know. He's an interesting horse. I've always liked him, which is a problem because he doesn't win that often. but you know, he's got some really stiff competition. Paige McKenney, of course, fantastic horse, won 20 of 52 lifetime starts and $1.7 million. You know, he's always tough. And Fear the Cowboy is the horse that I picked on the stakes preview show. He's coming off arguably the best race of his life at Penn National, the Swatera Stakes, and I think he's going to get a perfect trip under Javier Castellano if he decides to run here.
All right, Fear the Cowboy, 7-2 on the morning line. You also have Mr. Jordan in there, who last time out was a big winner at Gulfstream Park West. He won by 11 lengths that day in wire-to-wire fashion. Do you give Mr. Jordan much of a shot to duplicate that performance and maybe pull off an upset?
I do give him a shot. His last race was super impressive. Got a 106 Brisnet speed figure. The thing I don't like about him is he's run eight times at Gulfstream. He's never won. He has 3 seconds and a third. So I don't know. You can't really count Gulfstream against them, really. He's run well there, but he doesn't have any wins there. So that's a little bit of concern, but I do think Mr. Jordan has a chance.
The Harlan's Holiday is 4:06 Eastern time. It will be followed by the Tropical Turf, another grade three, which is 1 mile on the turf course. Post time is 4:37 Eastern, and this is the designated contest race on our website today for our Road to the Florida Derby Challenge. You can go there now and register your pick for the Tropical Turf Stakes, and you pick one horse that you think will win. You pick an alternate selection just in case your primary horse gets scratched, and you could be on your way to the 2018 Florida Derby, an all-expenses-paid trip for two. Hotel, lodging, I guess hotel and lodging are the same thing. Airfare and lodging. I guess it depends.
You go to the hotel and then you go to the lodge.
Yeah, exactly. Check out all the details.
The water buffalo.
On our website. How about the Tropical Turf? Right? Who, if you're selecting one horse in the contest, who's it going to be?
Well, I'm going to take Tower of Texas, who I picked on the Stakes Preview Show, the Naira Betts Stakes Preview Show, which is on every Friday evening, 6 to 7. But Tower of Texas, he ran a really good race in the Labib at Woodbine last time out, won the race. The second-place finisher, Glenville Gardens, came back to win. I think he's another one going to get a good trip from the inside post. Luis Saez takes the reins today, and he had a bullet workout at Payson Park on December 11th for this race. He went 49, breezing the best of 24. So I like that. But this is a wide-open race. I believe the Big A picked Camelot Kitten. You've got Le Ken there from the Ignacio Correas barn. He's got a chance. All Included from Pletcher. You mentioned how hot he is. Galton from Mike Maker's barn. Western Reserve, Kent Sweezy, a horse with a lot of tactical speed, probably make the lead. Black Type, Christophe Clement's horse, who's been on a little bit of a streak the late fall and late summer and early fall. So, I mean, it's a very tough race, a wide-open race, but I picked Tower of Texas.
Yeah, I think he's going to be very tough in there, too. He always seems to show up. He's run against some great competition, and we'll see if he can pull it off. Again, that is our designated contest race in the Road to the Florida Derby Challenge, now on our website at horseracingradio.net. Pont, have a couple minutes left to look at a Derby points race taking place tomorrow.
Yes, and if I could only find my PPs.
Remington.
There it is, Remington. Yeah. You had me all screwed up here. The Springboard Mile Stakes, $400,000 race, and it's got Derby points this year. It's an interesting field. There's horses coming from all over. I made it between five different horses. But the horse I like best is Combatant, who's Steve Asmussen's horse. He's only run twice. He ran fourth on the turf first time out, came back and won on the dirt at Churchill Downs. He got a 90 Brisnet speed figure that day. He looks like he's improving and could be any kind of horse. But there's several horses in here that have a shot. Doug O'Neill's got Flip the Coin Jan coming in from California. You've got Bodie's Maker for Alan Milligan, who's a fantastic Midwest trainer. He's got another horse in there too, Sol Pise. Flat Lucky, another Steve Asmussen. Larry Jones has Believe in Royalty, who is a Brereton Jones Airdrie stud bred by Tappet out of a proud citizen, Mary Believe You Can, who you may remember. And that horse has a good chance under Robbie Alvarado. It's a wide open race. It's going to be a good betting race. It goes at 8:40 on Sunday night. So right before you watch the football game, you can watch this race, maybe make a few dollars and take it from there.
Yeah, there you go. Right after the Pittsburgh Steelers have wrapped up the number one seed in the AFC. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, that could happen. It could happen.
We'll see.
The last minute field goal. That's their stock in trade.
Well, I don't know if I can take another one of those games. We've been at the last three, and I don't know. We'll find out. But if it goes that way, I'm okay with it. 140 days, 7 hours, 2 minutes, and 56 seconds away from that Run for the Roses. So make sure you check out that Springboard Mile at Remington tomorrow night. We're going to get to a break. We'll come back and wrap up this edition of the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Adina Spring Stallion Point of Entry. a five-time Grade 1 winner viewed by many to be the heir to Dinah Former's global legacy. The sire of two-year-old stakes winner Glamination in his first crop, along with the impressive filly Moonlight Rain, who defeated males in her debut. On the racetrack, Point of Entry was the first horse since Theatrical to win the New York Turf Triple Crown, accomplishing the feat by a combined 9 lengths.
Point of Entry scores to win the Man of War by 4 lengths. Wild final furlong coming here in the Sword Dancer, and here comes Point of Entry, who's running to daylight.
And they're coming down to the finish, and Point of Entry will go to the Breeders' Cup on a 5-race winning streak.
From a remarkable female family, Point of Entry's first 4 dams are Grade 1 winners and or Grade 1 producers. The heir to Dinah Former and the next global sire is Point of Entry, standing at Edina Springs. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwich Shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan.
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 and 220.
Minutes?
No seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you got to be more than fast.
More than fast.
You got to be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I've thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now is good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Avalapadopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
That's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Power.
Bodie Meister is turning the Arkansas Derby into an absolute romp.
Passion.
Pioneer of the Nile, full stretch, but keeping Chocolate Candy at bay. And Pioneer of the Nile and Derek Gomez have won the Santa Anita Derby.
Performance.
Royal Delta, my Miss Aurelia, here is a champion again. Royal Delta has won the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic.
Gainsway Stallion Empire Maker, a champion and sire of 11 Grade 1 winners, including 3-time Eclipse Award champion Royal Delta and Classic Placed Bodie Meister, sire of 2017 Kentucky Derby winner Always Dreaming, and Pioneer of the Nile, sire of Triple Crown winner American Pharaoh. Empire Maker's first U.S. crop since returning from Japan are now weanlings and have sold for up to $425,000. Boasting excellent fertility, his 2018 book is limited to 130 mares.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back, Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Getting ready to wrap up a very busy show. Mike Penna, Jude Feld. Next Saturday, I'll be flying solo on this program as the Pontiff takes a little time off for Christmas, and should be a lot of fun. We'll have several special guests joining me, and we'll get a chance to talk about various topics and look back on some of the top moments of 2017. Had a chance to visit with apprentice jockey Wes Hamilton and legendary sports writer Dick Girardi from the Philadelphia Daily News in the first half of the show. Talked to jockey Francisco Torres and Terry Birch, who is the interim director of the Equine Industry Program, here in the second half. And, of course, took a look at some of the big races. And you can hear more race analysis by checking out the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts, which is posted on our website now at horseracingradio.com. .net, Jude and the Big A, Anthony Stabile, handicap all the big races coming up this weekend. Pontiff, we're also closing in on opening day of the Santa Anita winter meet, which is traditionally the day after Christmas. It's a day that you hold near and dear to your heart because you kind of cut your teeth growing up in Arcadia, going to that particular day, and it was kind of a national holiday for you and your family.
Oh, yeah, opening day every year, and getting the racing form on Christmas Eve and laying down on the floor of the living room and handicapping, and my mother yelling at me because the newsprint would get on the carpet. And we were having guests, and it's always a big day, opening day of Santa Anita. It will be featured on the Stakes Preview next week. I will not be on the Stakes Preview, but Anthony's going to cover those races because there's a paucity of stakes on the weekend. Obviously, a lot of tracks are closed for the weekend, and so the opening day stakes will be covered on the stakes preview next week.
Yeah, and I think they're going with the traditional calendar giveaway on opening day. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. A beautiful calendar. We got a fantastic calendar from Mike Nyman up at down at Gulfstream Park. Beautiful photos.
Gorgeous.
It's like the most beautiful racing calendar I've seen in a long, long time. I sent the copy that I got to a friend of mine in California who usually gets the opening day calendar. She was so thrilled to get that, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, we've been giving away a couple of calendars from This Is Horse Racing, our good friends Sean and Joe Clancy. We've done that on the Bristnet.com call-in show the past few weeks, and we'll continue to do so next week as well. Those calendars are simply spectacular. I mean, everybody who puts together these racing calendars really does beautiful, beautiful work.
Yeah, yeah. The Gulfstream one's fantastic, and I'm sure Sean and Joe Clancy's is fantastic, too. We have some beautiful horses running right now, so the calendars have to be good.
All right, remember to follow us on social media, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook is where you can find us. Our poll question today, well, Bolt Doro holds on to win 43-39 over Good Magic in terms of the two-year-old who should win the Eclipse Award. All right, for our producer, Lee Delapina, for Sean C. with our social media, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Pennant. Thanks for listening, and go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados.